Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Tuesday night edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. And we're going to try to pack just as much as we can into the program tonight as is humanly possible. Simply because I won't be here Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'm on the road. As I mentioned last night, I'm headed for Nash Vegas. And an effort to counter the rampant, shameless disinformation, unfactuality of the right-wing coal mob. As it relates to teachers of science. So tomorrow's a travel day, and then Thursday and Friday I'll be at the conference and heading home on Saturday. It'll be busy. I'll miss you guys. I hope you'll be back here on Monday for more and Monday, because I'm sure between now and then, just like sort of playing a great big game of cultural whack-a-mole, there will be more ends popping up here, there, and yonder. Some of tonight has a bit of a flavor of a prayer meeting Wednesday. Other parts of it are almost like a look back at more and Monday, as a matter of fact. So where to start? Let's try this. Let's try this, because I think you'll find it rather interesting. A little article from The Hill. You know, the newspaper in D.C. Headline. Obama floats Camp David retreat with GOP at White House meeting. Oh, my goodness, will they make s'mores? I can almost hear the weenies roasting over the... Sam Youngman is the author. Sandra sent this article along to me. President Obama and Republican leaders voiced optimism for a new bipartisan spirit after a White House meeting Tuesday, even as they appeared to edge no closer to a deal on the expiring Bush tax cuts. My, that's just... that's just so banal, isn't it? President Obama and Republican leaders voiced optimism for a new bipartisan spirit. You know what that means, right? Bipartisan spirit? That means that we do what the Republicans tell us to do and like it. You know, eat it and smile. And then we'll call it bipartisanship. But that's not the part that caused Sandra to send me the article or caused me to go into paroxysms of that. No, it's in the second paragraph. The second paragraph, which states, the president acknowledged to Republicans that he did not reach out to them as much as he should have in the last 2 years, according to incoming House Majority Leader Eric Cantor. To that end, Obama said he was looking forward to more conversations with Republicans, including a possible retreat at Camp David. Bring your sleeping bags! We're going to have a sing-along! Blech. Is this just theater? Because if it is, I don't like it. I'm walking out of the play. Or is it reality? Does Barack Obama really think he didn't do enough to work with a gang of bloodthirsty thugs? Just ask him, And apparently I'm not the only one asking this question, because the brilliant Tom Tomorrow, the author of This Modern World, has a new strip up, and I think it's instructive on the status of this very issue. The title of this particular set of panels of This Modern World by Tom Tomorrow, visible at salon.com, I might add, is The New Bipartisanship. And The New Bipartisanship features two characters. Namely, the tepid moderate and the right-wing nut job. As Tom Tomorrow says, two sides of the same coin. And I was once offered a job in which I would be providing reading services for the visually impaired, and part of it was going to involve reading the Sunday funnies into a microphone. So let's see if I've still got the old knack. You know Tom Tomorrow, right? It's not like there's a lot of going or doing. It's dialogue and two people. But this particular strip features, again, the tepid moderate and the right-wing nut job. What's interesting is the tepid moderate isn't drawn to look like Barack Obama, when it clearly should. Dialogue. Tepid moderate. Clearly, we don't see eye to eye on everything, but there must be something Democrats and Republicans can work together to achieve. Right-wing nut job. Yes! The demise of the Democrat Party!
What?
Look, just since the election, Republican leaders have snubbed a presidential invitation, announced that their only goal for the next 2 years is to defeat Obama, and are even blocking a nuclear arms treaty. Do we have to hire a skywriter and spell it out in giant letters for you? We're not interested in finding common ground. We're interested in scorched earth, take no prisoners, annihilation. We despise you with the raging intensity of 1,000 white-hot suns. If you reach across the aisle, we will chop off your arm with a hatchet.
Tepid moderate.
Okay. We have some philosophical differences, but surely we can find a way to...
Die, liberal scum! Die! I don't know why Tom Tomorrow didn't draw the tepid moderate as Barack Obama. The president acknowledged to Republicans that he did not reach out to them as much as he should have in the last 2 years. To that end, Obama said he was looking forward to more conversations with Republicans, including a possible retreat at Camp David. In comments after the meeting, Obama lamented the political incentive of balking at compromising the current hyper-partisan climate.
I was pleased to see several of my friends in the room say, "Let's not try to duplicate that," Obama said following a longer-than-expected 2-hour meeting.
Ouch. Are you one of those people who went door-to-door for Barack Obama in 2008, was met with derision, catcalls, threats of violence? Are you one of those people? And you did it anyway because you felt like you were really doing something for the country? That this was necessary, hard work that had to be done because the country was in real trouble and had to be turned around because the Republicans had just about completed the utter destruction of everything we hold dear. Did you do that? Yeah. How do you feel? How do you feel? When you hear things like, "Well, I did not reach out to them as much as I should have." How do you feel? What does it make you want to do? Vomit in a bucket, maybe? And then, of course, there's Tom Tomorrow with that accurate assessment of all right-wing philosophy.
Die, liberal scum, die!
So we've got that. Now, with that as backdrop, the sense that Barack Obama feels like he wasn't unpartisan enough. With that as a backdrop, I offer you Representative Joe Barton of Texas. Now, over there in that other corner stands Barack Obama, humming Kumbaya for all he's worth. The ranking Republican on the House Energy and Commerce Committee is Joe Barton. We've talked about him before. And he's passing around a little slideshow, emailing it, you know, PowerPoint. And he says in this slideshow, and what he's doing is campaigning for what? He's campaigning for the chairmanship of that House Energy and Commerce Committee, because he wants to get in there and run that committee and do for the oil industry what Monica did for Bill. Reading from the Al Kamen article in the Washington Post, Barton says, or the text says, Barton naturally touts his conservative credentials, saying, quote, I know the ropes. I'm sorry, he's from Texas. I know the ropes and can hit the ground running immediately. But then there's what the article in the Washington Post calls the money slide. Ew. Were there fluffers involved? Ew. The slide is titled, What's in Store for the Obama Administration? And there are photos there of President Eisenhower, General Omar Bradley, and General George Patton. And it's accompanied by the following. Quote, Speaker Boehner is our Dwight Eisenhower in the battle against the Obama administration. Majority Leader Cantor is our Omar Bradley. I want to be George Patton. Put anything in my scope and I will shoot it. I repeat, those words follow a slide titled, What's in Store for the Obama Administration? I want to be George Patton. Put anything in my scope and I will shoot it. You know what? It was disgusting a month ago when Democratic Senate hopeful Joe Blanche Manchin said he was going to take dead aim at the Obama administration and then actually fired a gun into something that was on a tree, tacked to a tree, called the Cap and Trade Bill. We have yet to find out who exactly fired that rifle, because you know that Joe didn't get that bullseye. But, you know, if a Democrat, well, you know, a Dino, Blanche Manchin, can do it, then by God, so too can the right wing. And there it is. I want to be George Patton. Put anything in my scope and I will shoot it. Am I overreacting? Because it sounds to me like Joe Barton says that he would actually like to shoot Barack Obama. And I don't know about you, but while I have real disputes with Barack Obama, I have a greater dispute with people who want to shoot him simply because he was legally elected president of the United States. From the Joe Barton slideshow. The facts. This is a critical time in America's history. Unemployment near 10%, spending at unsustainable levels, expansion of the size and scope of government, Obamacare compounding all problems,
the American electorate expecting action. The Republican majority has 3 to 6 months to prove to the American people that the second chance was worth it. I'm asking for your vote for chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee. You need your best team on the field from day one. I know the ropes and can hit the ground running immediately. Passed Energy Policy Act of 2005. Passed only major reform of NIH ever. Passed Deficit Reduction Act of 2006. Largest cuts from any committee. Well, that's why, Joe Barton. But in Texas, we don't care where you're coming from. What matters is where you're going. My vision. Focus on key priorities. Repeal Obamacare and replace with pro-market reforms. Thorough oversight of all agencies, including EPA, DOE, FERC, and NRC. Telecommunications policy. 2. Work through teamwork. What the hell does that mean? 3. Communicate clearly to promote the successes of our members. My pledge to freshmen. I was the first ranking member to say I want freshmen on my committee. The freshman class makes up about a third of the GOP conference. They should be reasonably represented on the committee that deals with issues that help get them elected. By the way, all through this, he refers to them as the freshman class. Wouldn't that be freshman class? F-R-E-S-H-M-A-N, not E-N. Oh, but who's counting a little? What's the difference between an A or an E when we're just trying to figure out some way to shoot that Obama? Who is Joe Barton? Fiscal and social conservative. ACU lifetime rating of 94%. Led Republican resistance to Obamacare in committee. And he's proud of this. Forced markup in committee to take more than 17 days to complete. Led fight against cap and trade, which was DOA in Senate. Forced the Democrats to endure a 4-day markup with 300 prepared amendments and 47 offered amendments. Led the opposition to net neutrality proposals to regulate the Internet. I got something on that in a minute. That's right, a free and open Internet is something that Joe Barton opposes. Just, you know, please make a note of it. In a nutshell, truer words have never been spoken. In a nutshell, we have a golden opportunity to right the ship. I think he means right wing the ship. You want your best people on the field from day one. Joe Barton has always delivered the key votes for Republican leadership as both chairman and ranking member. What's in store for the Obama administration? Speaker Boehner is our Dwight Eisenhower in the battle against the Obama administration. Majority Leader Cantor is our Omar Bradley. I want to be George Patton. Put anything in my scope and I will shoot it. I don't want to let this just blow past, but shh. What did he just say? Beyond the fact that he wants to shoot Barack Obama. Beyond saying that, what else did he just say? Why, look, boys and girls. He said that the Obama administration are Nazis. Man, they are out of the closet and marching on a road of bones, aren't they? Speaker Boehner's our Dwight Eisenhower in the battle against the Obama administration. Well, the only generaling Dwight Eisenhower ever did was against the Nazis, right? Majority Leader Cantor is our Omar Bradley. Well, wasn't he second in command? Yeah, and fought the Nazis, right. And let's see, George Patton fought the Nazis. Now, I don't watch a lot of for-profit media. I would be interested to know from you
I would be interested to know if you've seen any coverage anywhere, heard any coverage, of the fact that a leading ranking member of the Republican Party is out there calling Barack Obama a Nazi and saying that he wants to shoot him. Anybody? Anybody? The ABC coverage? Anything? NBC coverage? Anything? I imagine if it hasn't already, it'll have some prominence on MSNBC tonight. But you know, that's MSNBC. CBS, Cutesy Couric, has she had anything to say about Joe Barton saying he wants to shoot the sitting, legally, duly elected president of the United States? Has she? Crickets. Crickets. Nothing but crickets. And don't expect anything but crickets. Because that's how the for-profit media are. All they do is bow and kowtow and suck up to Republicans. Because they are owned by Republicans. Because they're owned by massive transnational corporations. No, you'll hear about it here. You might hear about it from Malloy. Maybe Tom Hartman will talk about it. But on the for-profit media, where it's money overall, nah, why bother? We wouldn't want, you know, we wouldn't want people to understand that the Republican Party are a gang of homicidal maniacs! Jesus God. I guess you've seen by now that the former Congressman Joe Scarborough has declared his opposition to Mussolini, saying that she cannot get elected president. Oh, he blistered her. And if you remember, what was it, a month or so ago? That Politico put out a story saying there is a storm coming of old guard opposition to Sarah Palin, that she will be stopped. She must be stopped. You remember when that happened? I do. Well, here's the first shot. Here's the first salvo. Oh, wait a minute. See what happens when you spend 5 minutes with Joe Barton talking about wanting to shoot people? You wind up using his language. My bad. But I'm sure that Caribou Barbie is having a sure on hissy fit with that. But she's got so many things to have hissy fits about, what with Keith Olbermann naming Bristol worst person in the world last night. Deservedly so, I might add. And then, there's a couple of other things. A couple of other things. One of them being Jebby Bush. You know, we haven't heard from Juanita in a while, and I hope she's okay, because I thought of her immediately when I saw this headline over at Think Progress. Jeb Bush calls GOP plans for government shutdown naive. Quote, you can't shut down the government, unquote. Oh, yes, they can. They'd like to. Because they would burn this entire country to the ground and leave it nothing but ashes, and then plow sand into the, or salt into the ashes. If they thought it would enhance and increase and solidify and consolidate their political power. Party first, baby! Party first! Newsmuck has a reporter there named Kathleen Walter. Kathleen Walter interviewed Jebby Bush. See, this goes with the attack on Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin will be shown to have been, all along, nothing but a marketing ploy, nothing but a scam, a stalking horse, if you will, for the real intentions of the GOP in 2012. Oh, you think you are, you think they don't have any real candidates. You think it's all Willard Romney and Godzilla from Wasilla and that amateur exorcist Piyush Jindal in Louisiana. Silly you, us, me. No. Waiting quietly back in the weeds is the smart one, Jebby Bush. Kathleen Walter asked him if he thought it would be a mistake for grassroots conservatives to push for a shutdown of the government. Here are the words of the guy who plans on being inaugurated president on January 20th, 2013. Maybe. I don't know. It's quite telling, really. Because, Jebby protests that he has no interest whatsoever in being president. Right? Oh, not me. No, not me. But, yeah, he does. So let's go to Kathleen Walter.
Florida Governor Jeb Bush. Elected in 1998 and having served two terms, Governor Bush is credited with spurring tremendous economic growth in Florida and reforming the state's education system. Today he is hailed as one of the most popular Republicans in the nation. Welcome back to Newsmax TV, Governor Bush.
Great to be back.
Well, in a recent interview with CNN's Larry King, your father cited former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney as his favorite for the GOP presidential nomination in 2012. What is your view of Governor Romney's prospects, and who are your favorites for 2012?
First of all,
and if you could be a twee, what kind of twee would you be? Come on, he's a Bush. How hard is this to sort out? So let's jump ahead just a little bit. At least I hope we do. No, this is the real serious candidate, you see. This is the guy that they think they can elect. This is the guy who can go toe-to-toe with that Kenyan fascist Lomunist. Right? I don't know about you, but the very thought of another Bush in office just gives me the creeps. Because those thieving bastards, they'll take anything that isn't nailed down and they'll get a claw hammer for the stuff that is. Because that's the way the Bush family operates. They're thieves. They're night stalkers. They are political and social footpads in the American mansion, if you will. Well, dadgummit, this is a 20-minute clip, and I can't seem to get it to go where I want it to go, which is kind of a shame, because I wanted you to hear it out of Jebby's own mouth. But you'll just have to trust me to read the quote correctly.
Governor Bush, some grassroots conservatives say that Republicans should reserve the right to shut down the federal government rather than vote to raise the debt ceiling in the next Congress. Do you view that as a mistake?
I view it as a little naive. First of all, you can't shut down the government. There are public safety, national security issues that override a well-intended point, I'm sure, that government is way too big. Better to have a plan on how you reduce the debt by reducing the deficit. And that plan is out there. You can create a roadmap where you have declining deficits that would create a whole lot of confidence, a lot more confidence than shutting down government for a couple of weeks and then admitting that it's not going to be finished. It's harder to build consensus around the tough choices that have to be made, but that's what has to be done. Oh, goodness me, you heard it here first. To our friends in the UK, run to the betting parlor, would you? Put £5 on Bush to win. You know what? I'll bet you won't get odds worth a damn. Because they know. The bookies in the UK know. But there it is. There it is. A little peek behind the curtain. A little teensy-tiny look at what's coming at you. Because, see, there was some polling data out there that said that asked people, would you rather vote for Barack Obama or Willard Romney? And a majority of people said, oh, I'm voting for Barack Obama. And then they said, well, okay, what if it was Barack Obama versus Sarah Palin? Oh, definitely Barack, definitely. Slow on the driveway, definitely Barack. And mentioned all the people who have been touted as the 2012 GOP presidential hopefuls. And every time the answer was definitely Barack, definitely. But I don't think Jebby was in that list. Because Jebby has repeatedly said, oh, I'm not interested. Not interested. Bull. He's interested. There's power and money to be seized. Jesus, he's interested. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think you do. See, that's the thing. We understand the nature of the Bush family. They whom Malloy refers to as the Bush crime family. And they are. They're a criminal enterprise. It's not at all hard to figure out. But you got to wonder about the Obama administration. Do they know that there's a big setup coming? You have to wonder. And by the way, I wanted to share something with you. Totally off topic. You know, I've told you before that I get up in the morning and I get tons. Oh, Jesus. Tons of right-wing emails. And I got one today, and it just, I think it bolsters what I was saying about the TSA flap. Because I got a pitch to book a guest. I'm not going to mention her name. I don't want to drive her any web traffic. But I got a pitch to have a guest, and understand that this pitch went out probably to God knows hundreds of radio shows today, the vast majority of whom are right-wing radio shows and would gladly book this person. If you were wondering whether or not the TSA flap is being manipulated by the right wing for its own political gain, here's your answer. Because they're already out there. They're ready with people like this. What's the title of the pitch? Government's grope and grab has got to stop! Intrusive gropes of travelers' private parts by TSA's government employees is just the latest overreach of this administration to grope and grab every aspect of our lives. How's that grab you? No pun intended. Oh, but, you know, it's a Ginsu commercial. There's more. Don't worry. Government's grope and grab has got to stop. Here. So, intrusive gropes. You know, the word grope implies sexual gratification. Is there anybody out there who thinks that some poor bastard working for $12 an hour in a TSA security line is actually getting his jollies feeling up granny? I don't. Intrusive gropes of travelers, but you'll always see that word, grope, grope, grope. I've seen it on threads discussing it in liberal groups. Groping! I don't think there's any evidence that there's been any groping. Because even in its most bland, neutral connotation, to grope means to feel about without benefit of vision. Intrusive gropes of travelers' private parts by TSA's government employees. See, government employees? Does that mean that the ones who are private contractors, like at SFO, that they are not doing this? Oh, wait, I think I see an emerging theme. No private contractor from the private sector would ever do anything like this. See, it's those dirty, filthy government employees who want unions and stuff. Intrusive gropes of travelers' private parts by TSA's government employees is just the latest overreach of this administration to grope and grab every aspect of our lives. Here are some examples. 1. Grope our bodies literally or by X-ray, treating everyone as an equal threat to safety, and grab harmless items. 2. Grope our medical privacy in the electronic records the government wants for every medical visit. Never mind the fact that the electronic records could probably save more than a few lives by doctors having access to them without... But you know what I mean. They're groping our medical privacy. Grab our right to choose our medical treatment with our physician rather than the government panels now being created. What? Because last I checked, people are dying. And they're dying at the hands of panels of for-profit health care functionaries. Grope our financial records in the new Reform Act. Grab our money for higher health insurance premiums to cover new Obamacare mandates. Grope and grab our paycheck with more reporting and higher taxes. Grab our liberty to choose how we pay for medical care. Grope and grab our food choices with a food bill being rammed through in the lame duck Congress. As with health care reform, it has to be passed into law before we can see what's in it. Grope and grab our CO2 emissions from traveling, from heating and cooling our homes, even from eating high-fat foods in a vast new EPA power grab. Grab our energy sources with drilling bans onshore and offshore. Grope and grab our 401k and IRA plans in a proposed mandate to buy treasury bills. Grope and grab 30% of all personal and business international wire transfers of money beginning at 1-1-2013 buried in the jobs bill. Grab added 3.8% tax on the gain over $250,000 on sale of our homes. And grab our kids' toys, mandating removal from Happy Meals starting in San Francisco. I think it is high time we demand that our new congressional representatives start off the new year with a bold halt to the federal government grope and grab. That's a New Year's resolution for change we can deal with. Do you see? Do you see? We are talking about messaging that has been weeks, if not months, in the making. There is nothing organic. There is nothing grassroots about the flap over the TSA. It is wholly and entirely manufactured by the right wing. And the saddest part of that whole thing is that there are good principled liberals out there who are saying, yes, make them stop groping. Meanwhile, a babblehead today on Fox News Radio Rwanda said,
and some of these TSA employees, they can make $175,000 groping you at the airport.
Really? Get me my little blue rubber gloves and an application. Of course, that's, you know, a lie. Because it came from Fox. And as we like to say here in the hills at Fox, the truth ain't in 'em.
Grope and grab.
I mean, my God, that list. You see, this pathetic, sickening right-wing hustler who sent me this pitch, Dr. Blank,
has appeared on Fox News, Cavuto, Stuart Varney Show, Fox and Friends, and syndicated radio shows across the country addressing these critical issues. She's been an invited speaker on numerous healthcare town hall presentations and guest speaker on how healthcare regulation changes will not only physical but also financial health.
That's how it was written. I didn't miss a word. Grope and grab. They're ready. They're prepared. And they're playing us for suckers. Total flippin' idiots. And the thing is, we're going along with it. I would hazard a guess that 95% of the people complaining about the TSA haven't been on a damned airplane in a year. And these stories about these poor, poor people who were traumatized, they say, bang, they just shoot right to the top of all the story aggregators. It's instant hissy. Yeah, if you disagree, that's fine. But I need to have it explained to me how it is that the right wing was ready, Johnny, on the spot to exploit this even before it blew up. You know, last night we had the example of Representative Todd Akin from Missouri on the floor of the House saying the same ignorant, moronic crap that Rush Limbaugh was saying on the radio. And I would submit to you that that is not any sort of a coincidence. Republicans don't have accidents. Republicans are not the beneficiaries of happenstance. Republicans plan. Republicans work. Republicans strive tirelessly to achieve their disgusting, greed-soaked, filthy, hate-filled ends. And on those stories where they can get to us to carry their water for them, because we're good, sensitive liberals and we don't want anybody subjected to indignity or harm or feel bad about themselves, Jesus, they sit back at the little bar somewhere on K Street with their merrily tinkling martini glasses and they go, hey! Yeah, look over here! Look at the liberals! Schmucks! Yeah, by the way, David in Tennessee telling me, only 292 hours a week at $12 an hour to make $175,000 a year. I don't know if I'm up for that. I guess all I'm asking you is to keep your eyes open. Keep your eyes open. If you see a story blowing up, and anything in, always have a hair trigger BS detector. Because if you start looking around, you'll find out that you're probably being conned. And I am convinced now, I am convinced absolutely, positively, that this whole TSA thing is a great big right-wing con. There, I said it. Write it down. It's the 30th day of November. It is 6:46 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Write it down. Because while everybody else continues hooting and hollering and squealing and screaming, I know that we are being subjected to a monumental right-wing con. And when the truth comes out, when the facts come out, and it's actually apparent that, yes, indeedy, it was, just drop me a note. Just make a call and say, hey, Bob, yep, you nailed it. They had us for lunch. Because they are. Because they are. So we'll take a little break and come back. Your phone calls are always more than welcome. You know that. 877-443-2366 is the number. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Rings into the same place. Easy, easy, easy. An email does, in fact, come in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. And there's no tenderness like before in your fingertips.
You're trying hard not to show.
Thank you. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, November 30th, 2010.
I would like to welcome all of you to Mexico and to Cancun and to the United Nations Climate Change Conference.
After failure in Copenhagen, the next climate summit begins in Cancun. Bye-bye, Bluefin.
Sorry, Charlie.
Plus, the Earth now in 3D.
That's odd. I thought it was always that way. All that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
With increased skepticism raised by the ClimateGate scandal just 1 year ago, maybe it's time for the granola-crunching press to change its doom and gloom message.
Or maybe it's time for Fox News to change its fake news reporting. Just saying. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is sponsored by you. Yes, you. Unlike Fox News, we are not funded by billionaires who don't care about the truth. If you'd like to continue hearing the truth on your public airwaves, please support the Green News Report by stopping by our website at greennewsreport.bradblog.com and hitting that PayPal button. Or you can PayPal to greennews@bradblog.com because the truth matters now more than ever. Okay, Des, here we go again. Climate conference in Cancun. Will we have any more luck down there than we saw out in Copenhagen earlier this year?
We'll just have to see. As you heard in our opening, that was the Mexican Nobel Prize winner for chemistry, Mario Molina, welcoming delegates to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which began on Monday in Cancun, Mexico. The nations of the world are meeting again to negotiate a comprehensive climate treaty, but after last year's failed summit in Copenhagen, expectations this year are very low for reaching any kind of binding treaty to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions and stave off the predicted effects of global warming. But the new head of the UN conference, Cristiana Figueres, tried to strike an optimistic note in the opening session.
Cancun will be successful if parties compromise, if they make sure that in the process of getting what they want, they allow others to leave with what they need.
Optimistic indeed.
Yeah, but the negotiations are already splitting along familiar lines. Rich versus poor countries, developed versus booming developing economies, and a general sense that little can be accomplished in the area of emissions amid the standoff between the U.S. and China. China is now the largest greenhouse gas emitter in the world.
They beat even us?
Yes, they do.
Way to go, China.
But Figueres highlighted other areas of broad agreement that could be reached. Deals on adaptation, technology transfer and forests, and creating a fund for financing for poorer nations to adapt, but she noted it may not be enough.
Even if all the national targets and actions now on the table are honored in full, they will not meet the goal of avoiding a rise of over 2 degrees in global temperatures.
In fact, the prestigious Royal Society of Britain said last week that on our current trajectory, we are headed potentially for rising temperatures of 4 degrees Celsius, which could have dramatic impact. As for the rest of the conference, experience says the agreements usually don't emerge until the closing days of the summit, 2 weeks from now. We'll keep you posted.
But Charlie, Starkist don't want tunas with good taste. Starkist wants tunas that taste good.
Here they are.
In another international conference over the weekend, short-term profits won out over long-term sustainability. The international body in charge of regulating commercial fishing in the Atlantic Ocean again failed to cut fishing quotas and thus save the bluefin tuna from commercial extinction. The bluefin tuna market is so lucrative that, by some estimates, it could become commercially extinct as soon as 2012. Conservationists have been calling for a total moratorium to give the species time to recover, but the International Commission for the Conservation of Atlantic Tunas voted over the weekend to leave catch limits essentially unchanged and even failed to agree to ban fishing during spawning season when juvenile fish are often captured before they have a chance to reproduce.
Sorry, Charlie. Why do you hate profits, Desi?
And finally, Google has launched a 3D version of Google Earth, but with a twist, timelines. Now you can see how different regions have changed over time. Check out Haiti before and after the earthquake, or deforestation in Indonesia and the Amazon. You can download it for yourself and see the human impact on the Earth.
And you can see that story and all the other ones we didn't get to today at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Download us anytime on iTunes. Listen to us on your smartphone via Stitcher Radio and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
South of the border, down Mexico way, that's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray south of the border, down Mexico way. She was a picture in old Spanish lace.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Exactly 7 o'clock straight up here on the East Coast. Ron and Raleigh shooting a note along the Jebster. Where has old Jeb been keeping himself? I haven't seen hide nor hair of him since he left the governor's office. He's been as scarce as Neil Mr. Testing Bush. I'm truly amazed by the fact that in all likelihood the nitwits in this country will elect another Bush to the White House. Yeah, you know, I don't know. I guess he's been spending more time with his family. You know, keeping Noelle off the keeping her from, you know, skiing on her nose and the whole Bolivian marching powder thing and trying to keep his son in college and from doing donuts in other people's yards. You know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I fully expect that the Jebster will be, in fact, the Republican nominee in the year 2012. Wait and see, but remember, just remember, okay, you heard it here first. We live ahead of the curve. Just do. Can't help it. And before I go to the phones, I had a question from Reverbo, who did that version of You've Lost That Love and Feeling. That, of course, it was originally the Righteous Brothers, but that was a version, a cover by one of my guilty little pleasures, Hall & Oates. Sorry. But, yeah, it was a good version. And I love Hall & Oates. I really, really do. But I love nothing more than a Riley sardonic bumper coming out of a piece. You know, it just makes everything so much more fun. But apparently you got to be careful about that. Now, all of you who get yourselves in a tizzy every time I mention sports, you don't have to go away or anything. Just bear with me for about 30 seconds, because this is just fun. You know, this past Saturday was what we call in Alabama the Iron Bowl. Shortly after you're born, you declare to yourself as either an Auburn or an Alabama fan, or there's a significant minority in North Alabama that are just Tennessee fans and screw both. But no, mostly you're either an Alabama fan or an Auburn fan. And Auburn, in one of the most dramatic football games in recent memory, managed to beat Alabama on Saturday 28-27. That's a hell of a game. And they did it behind their presumptive Heisman favorite quarterback, Cam Newton. And Cam Newton is embroiled in scandal and controversy because apparently decisions were made, and not necessarily by him, possibly by his daddy, who, of course, is a minister of the gospel. Who was going around, nope, Cam won't play for you for that. Nope, got to be some money. Got to be some money. Come on, give till it hurts. Jesus wants you to pay Cam to play quarterback, you know. And so it's all over the state of Alabama that, well, it wasn't just a regular straight-up kind of recruiting kind of thing. The idea that Alabama would complain about that is, of course, ludicrous, but yeah, who's counting? So anyway, before the game, as the Auburn team was loosening up and limbering up and going through their pregame drills out on the field in Tuscaloosa, the person who's in charge of playing music pregame, well, that person has been fired because the music played was just a little too ironic, just a little too sardonic. I suspect there is a talk radio producer just busting to get out of this individual whose name has not been released. The story was first reported in the Tuscaloosa News, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You know, in Africa, the elephants' tusks are fixed firmly into their skull structure. But in Alabama, the Tuscaloosa. Jesus. Anyway, so this guy plays, it's a part-time staffer, and the person plays music during the pregame, you know, just for fun, over the PA system. But apparently, the University of Alabama has a policy that says every song that gets played has to be pre-screened, and all videos played have to be pre-screened and passed on by the university by a senior athletic administrator. And the staffer in this instance didn't get the songs cleared. Why? Well, because, you know, Cam Newton was alleged to have had, his daddy was alleged to have said it would cost $180,000 for Mississippi State to get Cam Newton. Right. So what does our wiseacre bumper music player at Bryant-Denny Stadium play on Sunday during Auburn's warm-ups? That's right. He went right for the jugular. He went to the Steve Miller Band and played Take the Money and Run, followed, of course, by Son of a Preacher Man. I don't know who the person is, but I got big thumbs up for you here. Anybody that's got an eye for a great bumper gets some big respect along in this direction. So I'm glad you liked you've lost that love and feeling in comparison, you know, coming out of the TSA story. I thought it was wry. But let's go to the phones. I'm sorry the phones weren't ringing earlier. I had to reboot the phone system. Who knew? They were working last night. Oh, well. But you know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. I believe this is Sandra. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Am I first again?
You're first. You win.
Listen, did you ever see that article celebrating secession without the slaves?
Oh, yeah, I saw it over at Alternet. Just kind of made me...
Listen, I mean, they're planning a secession ball in Charleston. I mean, hello? joyous night of music, dancing, food, and drinks, says the invitation. You know.
Well, wasn't it the same way the night that they decided to fire on Fort Sumter? Beautiful night of music, dancing, drinking, gunfire?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no, but it's just, I mean, this is just an outrage. Okay, so it's been 150 years. And we're supposed to, what, take pause and celebrate what?
Let's see.
It is so disgusting.
The glorious experiment. There we go, glorious experiment.
It's just an outrage. I'm just sort of, It just pissed me off.
You can just see Rhett and Scarlett just dancing around, can't you?
Well, I mean, yeah, they're sort of trying to make it benign and just some kind of exercise in, you know, heritage appreciation is just an outrage. You know, it was a disgusting, brutal war that tried to vanquish something really horrific in this country. And now we have to have amnesia and forget and have a...
But you know what I find interesting, Sandra, is that you and I were talking about this very thing, what, a month ago? Before this even hit the radar?
Yep.
Because we had that article about New England re-examining its slave past.
Right, right.
And we sort of posed the question in conversation, my God, it is 150 years this year, isn't it? How will the South respond? Well, I think we've got our answer, don't we?
Well, it's just, yeah, it's incredible. Also, you know, on top of that, I didn't realize that cancer is advocating states being able to override federal law.
Preemption?
Yeah, these people are just, this is the same fool who thinks he can side with Israel to fight against the administration, right?
Right.
I'm
Cantor?
Yeah, Cantor. That Britney Spears lover.
Right,
know.
Right.
Listen, you know, if of course I'm just shaking my head at that little meeting this morning with Obama, but anytime I get too taken aback by that fool, then I look around and see these people and Barton, that freak you're talking about. Listen, I don't know what to do, because is it true that Obama is the only thing between us and those people? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm just really worried because Obama coming out talking about what the American people want, and he mentions deficits. I'm sorry, the deficit concern is only a concern for the elite.
Well, and the right wing shock troops that they have trained to go out and parrot talking points about it, sure.
No, but it's just kind of, I mean, to listen to him, and I just are we supposed to believe that he actually said that, or is that reported from the Republican side?
Well, no. What I found interesting was that the Hill story says the president acknowledged to Republicans that he did not reach out to them as much as he should have in the last 2 years, according to Eric Cantor.
Right. No, that's okay. So it's reported on their side, because I also later found that some Democrats, you know, meekly said, well, they didn't hear that. I mean, I like how they are just so strong and forthcoming with all their beliefs. They're so meek. I am just at a loss. The Camp David thing, please no.
you don't like s'mores? Because they're going to have s'mores and the Republicans and I can't wait to see what happens when Barack gets out the ukulele to play Kumbaya.
Well, he needs to be worried about that fool who thinks he's Patton or whoever the hell he thinks he is.
Well, maybe he won't shoot the president. Maybe he'll just slap him like Patton.
Well, no, but that's really, that
whole... No, I'm sorry. I'm disturbed. I'm disturbed by all these gunfire Obama images out there.
No, the eliminationist language is just rampant. And like you said, they are never checked by the media in any fashion. I mean, they're constantly reminding Obama that he lost not him, but his party suffered in this last election, and what is he going to do about it, and blah, 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 blah. But we never get any questions about these people like Barton. I mean, these people should be in cancer. Hello?
I mean, well, what would happen to a newspaper in Texas, say, in Barton's district, that published a story saying Representative Barton wants to shoot President Obama? Can you imagine the comments section of that story online? Things like, I'll buy you the bullets. Can I bring the gun? I mean, it's Texas again. And on the heels of, you know, the anniversary a week ago last Monday, it's Texas again. You know what I'm saying? They like shooting folks, those right-wing Texans. They think that that's an appropriate remedy to whatever they feel ails them. Well, just kill them.
No, and it's perfectly, but the thing is, though, it's perfectly okay among the mainstream media for this language to go on day in and day out, and when it manifests itself in some crazy hit trying to shoot up something, it still isn't addressed. It just goes on. Listen, I don't know if you have a chance, but you need to look at the front shot of the Huffington Post right now. They have a lovely picture of Obama touching Eric Cantor. It's just, I can't take it.
Oh, dear God, I'm going there now.
Oh, and Mitch McConnell, that's an ugly damn man.
Is this the picture?
Damn it.
Judge, this is... That picture. I saw this picture earlier and it was nauseating.
Oh God.
You know, but you're right. Mitch McConnell in the background there. Does he have any teeth? I mean, just asking, because he looks like he forgot his teeth this morning.
That is terrible.
President may also ask panel to tackle jobless benefits. Kind words all around. Oh sure. And also, you know, off in the distance there's Nancy Pelosi. She's not in the room with Cantor and the president and Mitch McConnell.
I know, and they even had a...
She's literally on the outside looking in.
Oh, I know, and also they mentioned that Obama and these other freaks went in and had like a 35-minute talk without any aides. I mean, you know, is he crazy? He went in there alone with them people. Anyway, I don't mean to make light of it all, but...
I don't think you are.
It's so depressing that this is where we're at, and no one seems to be telling Obama that this isn't what he needs to be doing. It's incredible. Long-awaited bipartisan meeting yields another meeting. I mean, the best thing that could happen is for this to just drag out, and that tax cut, I swear all of them should expire. I know we've had this discussion before, but it don't make no sense. Let them all expire, come back, and introduce a new bill for the Republicans to shoot down.
Well, you know, you sent me that link earlier today to that Fox Business babble.
Oh, we'd love to hear what, I mean, isn't that incredible? I mean, could you believe those poor women who were talking and these people, oh, no, you don't mean that. You don't mean that. About the whole taxes, I've never seen anything like it. They are completely in fantasy world.
They're in don't give a damn world.
Well, I'm just saying, it just was horrible to look at.
Why would these, I've got a significant question here. Why would these two women who have been to hell and back, why would they go on Fox News for this?
No, it was just, I mean, it was incredible because, you know, they were being, I mean, they had to correct these freaks who're saying, well, you don't pay taxes. The woman had to say, what are you talking about? The benefits are...
Yeah, where's that portion of the tax code that says unemployment benefits are non-taxable? Because,
no,
you know what, I've never seen it.
No, it used to be until, I don't know if it was Clinton or what administration changed it. So now you're sort of taxed nonstop. You're taxed when you pay the first time around, but then you get this benefit that you've already paid for, it's taxed again 10%. So they couldn't even, that's how far removed those people on TV are. They really should not talk to struggling Americans because they look like buffoons. It was incredible.
The disconnect is stunning. Let's just share a little bit of this with folks.
Yes, yes.
Because this is, it's kind of unfair for us to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Here we go.
99ers, help us now. 99ers, help us now. More desperate people are going to be out of work, like those people protesting, with millions losing
those
benefits
people.
Right before the holidays. Unemployment offices in Indiana are taking precautions by hiring armed guards. Should we fear the 99ers might lose control and go wild? Let's ask Rhonda Taylor from Rhode Island and Wendy Ashley on the phone from Indiana. They're both unemployed and frustrated. Rhonda, let's start with you. You're unemployed. You're going to be 99 weeks on unemployment. Are you angry? Are you frustrated?
I've been 8 months without unemployment. I'm very angry and I'm very frustrated, but I'm not going to take it out on innocent people around me. I just want the government to work for me. I want the government to step up and realize that we didn't cause this recession, but we need help. We need help, a hand up, to get out of it. And
right.
I expect my government to work for me.
Do you have a gun?
No. Never
right.
I'm sorry, Sandra.
She's so careful with the hand up and, oh, no, we don't want to hurt anyone. I mean, what?
Well, I mean, isn't this just a little bit mind-boggling? Didn't we just go through a year of drooling, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking right-wingers running around with guns all over the place and, you know, eliminationism everywhere you look? But suddenly, if there's a group of unemployed people chanting, please help us, then because the whole story is about the fact that the Indiana Unemployment Division or whatever has hired private security to stand at the doors, you know, because I guess they're afraid.
No, and it's just the whole tenor of that segment, it has this aura of, like, demonizing these people who can't get a job. I mean, that was what I took away from it, too, and it really made me...
Oh, yeah, well, because that's the right wing, you know, at some point, you mean you couldn't find any job anywhere?
Right, that whole thing... And
did you know, how many toilet swabbing jobs did you pass up, honey?
No, that was so disgusting. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, it's past disgusting. It's and the panel itself, this guy is, what's his name, Bowling?
They're all that horrible sort of soprano looking dude who's talking about, they're all upset, what if you can't feed your kids?
Bo Deedle is on the panel. And, and really, this is the little chunk of poop on top of the whipped cream. Alphonse D'Amato is there to explain what it is that struggling people need.
And not only that, but he's the one saying, oh, no, you don't mean that, when she's saying the taxes, because everyone, because see, what I notice is that, when your ass starts to see the reality, like, I don't have a job, I don't have a home, and I didn't do this to myself, you start looking at why it's that way. So those people are talking about, the taxes, they need to pay taxes. No, you don't mean that. You don't mean that. They couldn't shut that woman up quick enough, Bob.
Oh, no, and see, and the camera was on the group, and apparently they left her mic open, or her line open through the mix or whatever, and she kept trying to jump in. No, stop, wait, what? No. And
right,
just,
no.
No, they're going to talk their talking points right over top of the person who's living the daggum reality.
Exactly, and I was just like, oh, my God. So, I don't know, I just thought that was incredibly telling, but the whole idea, though, that when you're struggling in this country, no way that you can even think about turning to Second Amendment remedy or even going in the streets. Are you going to be accused of being, you're angry, you're upset? Hello? They must be crazy if they think they can cut off people from the only source of income. What, I ask this every time I speak to you, Bob, what do they think is gonna happen?
They don't care.
I mean,
they're not that far into the process because they don't care. You know, their driver is going to come to the front door and pick them up and take them to the studio every day, or to the halls of Congress, or to their boardroom or whatever. And they don't have to see anybody like this, those people.
Yeah, well, I'm just, and it's not like I'm sitting around, encouraging or hoping that something bad happens. But I do wonder if they actually think that people who need to feed their children but can't are going to just slink away. And I'm worried that when they don't sneak away, what is it that the state have in store for those people and, by extension, us? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, a correction coming in. Ron and Raleigh noting it was St. Ronnie of Raygun who first started taxing unemployment benefits.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was Reagan or Clinton, but I knew that it was done. Oh, it was Reagan. Well.
Yeah, who's
surprised?
But, you know, there's another layer of analysis inside this little clip, Sandra, and that is this. I think maybe this is another one of those little moments where we sort of have to take stock of our own bubble, if you will. And the fact of the matter is, we sit here and we know that Fox is Radio Rwanda, as you so aptly noted. But you know what? Out in Indiana, they don't. If you're somebody who has been on unemployment for 8 months, you don't necessarily know that because otherwise, why would these two women have come on that program?
Well, yeah, well, nobody's. I mean, come on now. Yeah, no, that is our bubble. Because I mean, you know, there's very few people beyond you and a couple of other people I know who are even having conversations, you know, in that regard to distinguish between one horrible mainstream media outlet or another. I mean, speaking of that, have you noticed that CNN is trying to say they're in the middle?
Oh, God.
Have you seen that ad where they show MSNBC on one side and Fox on the other? I just about laughed my head off when I saw that.
Does that mean CNN now gets to make its logo an armadillo, you know, per Jim Hightower? The only thing in the middle of the road are dead armadillos and yellow stripes?
Exactly. But anyway, I didn't mean to sidetrack you. But no, you're right about that. And the thing is I feel bad for all the parties. We're all sort of scrambling for the small resources. And there's no time for people to analyze why they're in that situation, except those people are getting a little look-see because they are able to make the connection about the taxation, which I was encouraged by, I have to say.
Yeah, the one woman said, listen, let the damn things expire for everybody.
I almost fell out.
That's when Alphonse, Senator Pothole D'Amato, started having kittens with crocheted tails.
Started freaking out about it.
Let me take you one, if you've got just a minute, Sandra, let me go back and rework a theme from last night. Remember the Rush Limbaugh attack on the Indians and you know, they were fleeing socialism, and then lo and behold, there's Todd Akin on the floor of the House saying the same damn thing because these people have their messaging act so together. Mm-hmm. Well, there's another example of that. You know, there's Senator Pothole saying, that, you know, that nobody will ever have a job if we don't extend the tax cuts for the rich, right? I mean, you heard it, I heard it. Well, lo and behold, at the same time, what's his name here? Representative John Shadegg, a Republican from Arizona. He was interviewed by Mike Barnicle on MSNBC. And Barnicle asked him about extending unemployment compensation. And he just about had a baby on air. Here's the exchange. Barnicle. What about the fact that unemployment benefits pumped into the economy are an immediate benefit to the economy? Immediate. Shadegg cuts in. No, they're not. Unemployed people hire people? Really? I didn't know that. Barnicle. Unemployed people spend money, Congressman, because they have no money. Shadegg. Aha! So your answer is it's the spending of money that drives the economy, and I don't think that's right. It's the creation of jobs that drives the economy. Actually, the truth is the unemployment will spend, and here's the part where, you know, you strap in Bill Hicks style. The truth is the unemployed will spend as little of that money as they possibly can. Job creators create jobs.
That was the exchange?
I got it here, yeah.
Listen. I mean, that was the thing, the amazing about, I still don't know if you've watched that movie or not, but that was the main thing that was amazing to me about that labor movie, because they talked about demand and purchasing power, which is what it used to be focused on. So it's amazing. That is an outrage. Unbelievable. Well, did that Barnicle person challenge that? Because that is a complete lie. And more importantly, can someone please tell me what happened this last past decade when these so-called tax cuts been in full effect? Where's the jobs?
Well, you know, that's a significant point, Sandra, because we had, as noted last night, 8 years of the Bush administration with the tax cuts going like crazy. And didn't he finish 8 years without creating a single job?
Yeah, I think it was like minus 500,000 when you do the final tally. Something real crazy. But see, this is my thing about the Democrats and Obama. Obama needs to, he's already delegating to Tim Geithner to form some working group. Have you heard about this?
Oh, no.
Yeah. He's, after this meeting, he decided to delegate to Tim Geithner and some other financial person in his administration to create a working group, and he wants the other parties to have send their representative for this working group to work out this tax issue. Whereas anybody with any kind of president with any sort of leadership would be using this to negotiate himself. There's no need for delegation on this one. He needs to stop.
Well, you know, when you send an underling to do the president's job, what does that tell the other side about the significance that the president attaches to it?
No, it's incredible. I heard that and I thought, okay, well, but what I'm hoping, though, which maybe I'm just unrealistic, maybe it'll just be gridlock and that shit will expire.
You'd like to hope, but I'm utterly insecure about my feelings regarding this administration's ability to cave.
I know. I think they'll cave somehow, some way. And I keep reading this meme about how they're going to tie the extension to this unemployment for the desperate millions.
Yeah, well, and again, you know, this is November the 30th, Sandra. Welcome, we say, to another 2 million American citizens to the ranks of the people the right wing doesn't give a damn about, because this was the drop-dead day.
Yeah, well, they give a damn to hire people with guns to protect, what's going on in Indiana. I mean, see, that's the response that is scaring me.
And the thing is, it's so damn sad, because if something like that should happen, and God knows I don't want something like that to happen, but if something like that should happen, people will be gunned down in the streets like dogs.
Well, that's the thing, and that's what is the ultimate worry, because the state is well equipped to manage that level of unrest initially. And I think people are so beat down in this country, you kill a few hundred of them into that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know, well, that's okay as long as it makes people stay home and watch the TV. But again, once the cable gets cut off, it's going to get ugly.
Well, remember, I don't know if you remember this, but I've never seen nobody move faster than when the analog signal was about to go, and if you didn't have the box, you couldn't get TV. All of a sudden, they pushed the data up. Remember that?
Yep.
Because they need them TVs on. So I don't know, Bob. It's just like I wish I had something pithy to end with, but I don't. So.
Well, some things it's hard to be pithy about.
Oh, I know. Well, are you going on your trip for the week?
Yeah. I'm heading out. Tomorrow morning. I'll be in Nashville Wednesday night, and then Thursday, Friday, we'll be trying to counter right wing lies about science and coal.
Okay. Well. Anything social on the agenda?
Maybe, hopefully. Yeah, maybe a little walk down Lower Broad in Las Vegas or something. Maybe get a barbecue sandwich somewhere.
Right. Okay, well, listen, have a safe trip.
All right, thanks, Sandra. You take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Let's see. I'm going to go right back to the phones, but I want to play just a little bit more of this exchange because I want you to hear more of what Sandra and I were talking about. This is disgusting.
I had a gun in my life.
Wendy, let me ask you, and I'm not making light of this, I'm being very serious about this. Mm-hmm. Are you frustrated, Wendy?
Yeah, I'm frustrated, but like I said, not like Rhonda said, not enough to go and, you know, shoot up an unemployment office. You know, we're people like you guys.
All right, hang on, you two.
We're people like you guys. We're just normal, mild-mannered Midwesterners. But the problem is, Ms. Ashley, Ms. Wendy Ashley, you're not like them. You don't have a car to come and get you in the morning. You don't have an undocumented immigrant to look after your children and do your laundry and swab your toilets. You're like us. You're a member of the working class, sweetheart. you're not like them, and they're not like you, and if you say that very much more, they're going to get real uppity. Because they don't like you thinking that you're as good as they are. Because you ain't, sister.
Hey, I want to bring to the panel, because Bo
Deedle.
You know, then why are they hiring armed guards to stand in front of these unemployment offices?
In other words, we're going to extend this segment. We've just asked the woman if she's frustrated, and she says, yes, I'm frustrated, but I don't want to shoot anybody, and I don't want to blow anything up. So never mind what the woman actually said. We're going to go to security expert Bo Deedle and his pink necktie, and we're going to ask him to explain why Wendy Ashley is a dangerous person.
If Wendy and Deronda say it's not that big of a deal.
You know, we hope everybody's peace, love. We hope people don't resort to violence. But the clear facts are Christmas is coming up now. You can't buy your kids toys. Emotions run real, real high. When people look at things, people would...
And just as a point of inquiry, why is it that people get depressed when they can't buy their kids toys at Christmas? Could it be because they are bombarded from that same electronic morphine drip, the television, that they are bombarded with reminders that they are failures as human beings if they don't bury their children in useless commercial crap from China and instead focus on loving the ones around them? Could that be a part of it? Let's find out from security expert Bo Deedle.
Not ordinary steal will try to steal. People that wouldn't embezzle will try to embezzle to get that money.
Embezzlers? Really? Embezzlers? The unemployed has a rank of embezzlers among them? Jesus, the last I heard, that was one of those crimes that the big boys on Wall Street perpetrate. God almighty.
People are out of work. This is very, very bad time for these people to be out of work with no money coming.
These people. Maybe I'm oversensitive. That's like the third, fourth reference to those people and these people. When you have to put an impersonal pronoun in front of people, you are creating a linguistic you're creating a wall between you and them. Bo Deedle is telling the world that he's not like those people, because he's going to buy Christmas presents.
Toys for Christmas, put on a tree. You're liable to do anything. They do need armed guards.
What do you think, Senator?
Here comes Senator Pothole D'Amato, as corrupt a human being who has ever inhabited the halls of the United States Senate.
I think there's a middle course, and I'm not for extending unemployment benefits without making cuts, offsetting cuts. And I think that's what the Congress should do. They should extend unemployment benefits, but they should make sure they offset it by cutting back on the Obama trip.
The Obama trip. I really, really wanted you to hear that part. You know what he's talking about. They should cut back on the Obama trip. You know, the one to India? The one that Fox claimed was costing $200 million a day that didn't? That was just another lie spread around by Radio Rwanda. Yeah.
There are lots of things in lots of areas where you can save money, because it's a terrible thing to have a family and not be able to feed.
Let me ask Rhonda and Wendy. Let me start with you, Wendy. You've been looking for a job. You're actively looking for a job. You just can't find one.
Yeah. What's the matter, you lazy damn slug? You taking all that unemployment money and just sitting back and eating bonbons and ho-hos?
Exactly. I've sent out over 600 resumes since I've been laid off. And, you know, do I think the 99ers are going to become violent? No, I do not. Do I believe the benefits can be paid for? Yes, I do. I believe maybe, you know, the tax cuts, let them expire for everybody.
All right, hold on. Rhonda, let me go to you. You've been looking for a job for, what you say, 90?
Got to get away from Wendy, because she just spoke political heresy on anything that's owned by Rupert Murdoch. What? Let's ignore that. Let's pretend. Maybe we just pretend she didn't say it.
99 weeks plus an additional 8 months? Is that what you said?
That is correct. I have looked for every kind of job, even outside of my field, including Big McDonald's and Burger King.
Well, you can't tell. Listen, I'm trying to be open-minded here, and I'm trying not to be cold.
Oh, listen to him. He's trying to be open-minded. Why wouldn't he be? Is he that devoid of human conscience, of human sympathy? Yeah, he is.
Dallas, but you can't find any job?
No. I live in Rhode Island. There are no jobs, and they're not going to hire somebody older who has had a career, and they know that you're not going to stay. They're really going to put the time and effort into training you and then seeing you, once the economy picks up, go away?
Hang in there. Hang in there, you guys. Let me take it to my left here. The economy's bad. You can watch all the liberal television you want. You can watch mainstream media. They tell you it's getting better. Here I have two people.
Watch all the liberal television you want? Really? I want his television, because apparently it's got lots of liberal television on it. Mine doesn't. Mine has ABC owned by Disney. Mine has CBS owned by Viacom. Mine has GE owned by, or NBC owned by GE, soon to be owned by Comcast. Mine has Fox owned by Rupert Murdoch. There ain't no liberal television on my box.
We've been on unemployment for years. Can't find a job.
Right. That doesn't mean the economy's not getting better. It means the economy's been bad. So, you know, I think it's interesting if you listen to the second caller talking about let all the tax cuts expire. I mean, if you listen to people who are actually in the situation of what they need, the other person said, you know, we need a hand up. They need help from the government. This is what conservatives keep telling us that we shouldn't be doing for people. You know, I agree. Let them all expire. I agree. We should have cuts.
And yeah, sure. Oh, go ahead. Let them expire. Let us go further into debt.
Wait. Did you hear that? Let the tax cuts expire. Let us go further into debt. See, that's the thing about Fox. They just say stuff, and Emery and Marveline out there, you hear that? If we let the tax cuts expire, Marveline, we're going to go further into the debt. We can't do that. There's only one problem. It's extending the tax cuts that will drive us further into debt. That's a fact. It's an unassailable fact. It's like goddamn gravity, it's such a fact. But not in Foxiverse.
I think she actually meant let all of them expire for everybody, because that would mean her taxes would go up, because the reality is if they don't do something in Congress, the...
So we've got a blithering idiot here who, after the guest on the phone having made a rather clear statement of what it was she meant, no, that's class warfare. We couldn't possibly do that. She means let them expire for the rich people, but not for her, because her taxes would go up. And bless her poor little heart, Wendy in Indiana, bless her poor little heart, she tries to get a word in, but she doesn't realize that she's dealing with the mendacity merchants of the Fox News Radio Rwanda Consortium.
Let them expire. Let us go further into debt.
I don't think she actually meant let all of them expire for everybody, because in fact that would mean her taxes would go up, because the reality is if they don't do something in Congress, the average American family, working family, their taxes will go up between $1,000 and $1,800.
Now here's the fun part. This is the punchline. The dude that just said that, he is fonted on screen as a Democratic consultant. No, really.
Hey, to have your own
Christmas
tax credits expired?
Yeah,
it's called doing my part. It's called doing my part to save this nation that I love. I've worked for so long. And my job, you know, these jobs are being outsourced left and right. Companies are being paid to outsource our jobs. Why can't we find jobs? Because we're gone.
Are you willing? I mean, I guess you're not paying any taxes. You haven't worked in a long time.
Oh! Ignorance on parade. Get out the clown suits and the little funny cars.
But are you willing to pay taxes?
No, we pay taxes on our unemployment. That is a misconception. I pay taxes on my unemployment.
No, honey. No, please. It's not a misconception. Dear heart, you're dealing with Fox. It ain't no misconception. They lie. Really, Rhonda, they lie. Because they're Fox. It means they're liars. The truth ain't in them. I know you're in Rhode Island, but maybe you've heard that phrase. Maybe you've never seen the living embodiment of it, but Rhonda, you're in the middle of it right there. The truth ain't in 'em.
It is not a welfare check.
You're okay for
I
those
pay taxes.
To get raised.
Well, that would be a big mistake.
No, I'm not.
Well, that would be a big mistake. Yeah, letting the tax cuts expire. That would be a big mistake.
Okay, let me tell you that. That'd be a big mistake.
So they're going to let the greasy old corrupt former senator just completely overtalk this woman who is living the reality of her life, and he's going to tell her what her life really is, even though he's never known hunger. He's never known want. He doesn't know what it feels like to not have $2 in his pocket. But he's going to explain her reality to her. Oh, do tell, please, Senator Pothole.
The only way this economy is going to come back so that you can create jobs, real jobs, is if the small business community, which employs more people than all of the major corporations, begins to recycle those dollars that they save now because of that tax cut. Otherwise, this economy is going to continue, and you're going to have to continue on unemployment.
She's not on unemployment, you piece of crap. She hasn't had unemployment for almost a year. But he can sit there with that smug right-wing Republican look on his stinking, filthy, miserable face and lecture. Senator Pothole, Alphonse D'Amato, formerly of New York. There's only one problem. The small business has absolutely nothing to do with the tax cuts for the rich. I mean zero, mathematical zero to do. We're talking about people who make more than $250,000 a year. Not gross intake of a small business at $250,000 a year. But what I find fascinating is this juxtaposed against the messaging, lo and behold, coming from, Representative John Shadegg of Arizona. I mentioned this in the conversation with Sandra. Here it is.
Mike, hey, Congressman, please forgive me. I'm kind of an economic illiterate, but I keep hearing, listen to this one, yeah. I keep hearing from several Republicans that they would vote for the extension of unemployment benefits, which are to expire today, if those unemployment benefits are paid for. And yet these same Republicans say they will vote to extend all the Bush tax cuts when those are unpaid for. So my question to you is, in this lame duck session that we're approaching, would you vote for the extension of unemployment benefits right now, today, up or down, yes or no?
If they were paid for and if we extend the tax cuts. The issue is jobs. I mean, come on. The American people sent this message pretty clearly. They want us focused on getting this economy going. And I'm sorry that you can't see that helping people with unemployment and not enacting massive new tax increases, which will damage the job creation market, are linked.
There's the message again, that not extending tax cuts for the richest of the rich will damage job creation. There is not one iota of actual empirical data that backs up anything that hallucinating old right-wing freak from Arizona just said. Not one iota. But again, he's a repig-licking, so therefore facts don't matter, and it's okay to just lie.
They make sense together. Of course, Republicans don't want to tax the job creators because that will bring revenue down. Increasing nobody. You cite me an economist who says increasing taxes in a down economy is a good idea. I'm waiting.
Well, what about the fact that unemployment benefits pumped into...
So notice that we take a question about unemployment, and the next thing you know, this hateful old goon from the Republican Party is babbling about tax cuts. This guy is on message. His message is pure poison. But he is on message. Learn from these people. And yeah, I call them these people because they aren't like you and me. They are different from us. It's not that they're black or white. They're green. Money green. They're washing in it. They're soaking in it. But do you hear how skillfully he... And you know, Mike Barnicle's no slouch. But he turns him so deftly from unemployment to the poor, poor, pitiful, rich people. It's stunning when you slow down long enough to watch it happen. It's stunning when you see it coming from different outlets at the same time. And then you begin to realize that, baby, you're in the funhouse and, you know, it's Hotel California and you can check out, but you can never leave. Because if you try to leave, there's going to be a right-winger standing right there next to you, spouting right-wing filthy talking points.
The economy are an immediate benefit to the economy. Immediate.
No, they're not. Unemployed people hire people? Really?
Unemployed people spend money, Congressman, because they have no money.
So your answer is it's the spending of money that drives the economy, and I don't think that's right. It's the creation of jobs that drives the economy.
But if you spend money...
Screw it. He did it again. You're saying that, no, clearly Mike Barnicle did not say that. But he sets himself a tasty little straw man up and then has it the straw man. The fact of the matter is, it's beyond questions of job creation. We are at a place in this country where we are facing winter and there are millions of people who have no way to pay their power bills or their heating oil bills or their natural gas bills. That's beyond mere questions of economic job creation. Those are questions of life and death, and Representative Shadegg of Arizona just said, God damn you, die!
Didn't he? Didn't he? Because I'm pretty sure that's what I heard.
Variety store. Actually, the truth is, the unemployed will spend as little of that money as they possibly can. Job creators create jobs.
That's just insane. That is just four square crazier than a sprayed roach. The truth is, the unemployed will spend as little of that money as they possibly can. I'm sure some of you have been on unemployment. I have. Have you seen the check? Have you seen the amount? Have you seen the benefit calculation tables? Because you don't get the same amount of money you were making when you were working. And for 99% of working people, the money you were getting when you were working was not meeting all of your bills adequately and leaving enough left over to actually pretend that you have a middle-class life. And to cut that by another, by a significant percentage, and for this fool who has a car pick him up, who has his lunch brought to him, who wants for nothing, to have him say that the unemployed don't spend their unemployment checks? Great googly moogly, newsflash, you can't not spend your unemployment check. Or they'll turn off the power. Or come and get your car. Or auction your home on the steps of the courthouse for non-payment of taxes. This is insanity! And it is handed to the nation by broadcast media as if it is as valid an argument as the argument in favor of not letting people starve to death or freeze to death. It is lunacy.
You want to burden the economy? That's your Look, have
you been unemployed?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I will be.
What did you do with the money that you gave? Save it?
In about 32 days, I'll be unemployed, and I've been unemployed in the past. But look, the issue is, do we want to continue to do what the current administration and the current Congress has done, which is ignore the issue of jobs and increase taxes and not focus on the needs of the American people, or do we want to try something that might work, like not increasing taxes on the economy? This is a tax increase.
Oh, look at the messaging. Did you hear that? He's gone from not increasing taxes on the richest of the rich to not increasing taxes on the economy. I said it earlier. There are no Republican accidents. This is messaging that has been finessed and focus grouped and stroked and streamlined. And Emery and Marvelline are sitting there drinking it all in, because the only thing they ever hear are right-wing talking points. And no, they didn't hear it, because this was on MSNBC, and Emery and Marvelline know goddamn good and well that if they turn over to MSNBC, the next thing you know, they'll be communists. It's mind-boggling. Why don't we try something that works, like not taxing the economy?
In a down economy, and I still didn't hear you name the economist who says it's a good idea to raise taxes in a down economy.
I don't trust economists. They got into this trouble to begin with. But let's go back to what you said about unemployment checks. Unemployment checks, people don't spend that money?
No. They'll spend as little of it as they can because they'll hold on to it as long as they can. But in reality, they don't create jobs. You still haven't told me how unemployed people create jobs.
By getting them. Job creation doesn't drive the economy because job creation doesn't pay taxes. People with jobs pay taxes. People with unemployment checks pay taxes. But we mustn't let actual facts get in the way of Representative John Shadegg of Arizona, who says he's going to be unemployed in 32 days. I wonder if other unemployed people have the war chest going away that he has. He'll be unemployed for about a minute before he goes to work for the Heritage Foundation or the Cato Institute or the Competitive Enterprise Institute or the American Enterprise Institute, or the Jesus Loves Babies Association, or the Family Research Council, or Focus on the Family, or the Teabagging Nation. Gonna be unemployed. Kiss my butt. David in South Carolina writing in. He says, they keep cutting taxes in South Carolina for the wealthy and raising sales taxes, so the poor end up paying more and more taxes. Isn't it funny how that works? Ron and Raleigh saying, I see the filthy hand of Frank Luntz in this clip. Well, Frank Luntz does all the Republican messaging, so it's probably there's every possibility of that. And I don't know what the answer is. I think that's what bothers me the most. I don't know what the answer is. I do. Let the tax cuts expire, and then offer up a tax cut package for the middle class, but not for the filthy rich. And make the Republicans eat that. But wait, why am I saying this? Because that would require a White House and a Congress and congressional Democrats who could actually be on message with a laser beam focus. Remember when that phrase was coined by the Clinton administration, laser beam focus? They really did have one. Say whatever negative things you want to about Bill Clinton and his administration, and I'll join in the chorus. But they had the messaging thing down. This bunch, not so much. Gosh, I hope you're still there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, how many times did you play that cut?
What cut?
The
ones you just played with those idiots?
Once.
Is that not, I thought I heard it 5 or 6 times. Maybe I'm hallucinating.
No, just once, Jim.
Does that not tell you exactly what type of economic training these people have and how much they really understand about economics?
I don't think they need to understand about economics, Jim.
Yes, they do. If they're going to be in Congress, they need to have some basic, you know, knowledge of Keynesian economics and how the system works. Obviously, from what I've heard, these people do not.
No, they don't. But my point is, they don't care. Their only job is to take money from pile A and move it to pile B. And they own pile B.
I see. Well, and you've got Bo Deedle on there. Have you ever listened to him for any length of time?
More than I'd care to admit.
Have you ever watched Imus when he was a frequent guest on the Imus program?
Only very much in passing.
Well, you need to. You need to listen to this man. Because he's absolutely...
Oh, he's a veritable Solon from what I can tell.
Oh, he's absolutely crazy. I mean, he gets to the point where even Imus has to cut him off because he starts making up all these words and stuff like that. He's just a fucking idiot. Some type of guy who wrote one book called One Tough Cop and then was in a couple movies I saw. What a lovely person. Besides that, he talks about his son, Little Bo.
But, Jim, the thing is, you know that because you live in the real world. I know that. The Horn family knows that because we live in the real world. But if you get up in the morning, and when you turned the TV off last night, it was on Fox, and it's on Fox when you turn it on in the morning, you don't know.
My TV is never on Fox.
Well, I'm not saying yours is, Jim. You understand.
My TV is never on Fox. It never will be on Fox. I don't listen to those people. And I know what idiots and fools they are. And boy, by the way, going back to your earlier conversation about Rhett and Scarlett, number one, Scarlett didn't want a war. Number two, Rhett came in there and told them what fools they were for going to war.
Well, that's true.
Not one cannon factory in the South, and all you gentlemen have is arrogance.
And Margaret Mitchell wrote that looking backward, and she put the words of truth in Rhett Butler's mouth, but it was the truth.
Well, it was certainly absolutely the truth. I mean, the South was just went to war with stupidity and arrogance and an outmoded economic system that would have
and a big healthy dose of Scots Irish don't give a damn.
And that was, and, you know, let's face it, slavery in the South, and I'm not going to yell for this. It was about to go away, except the invention of one machine,
the cotton gin.
Exactly. But this is just absolutely insane. Our deficit is at $14.8 trillion. Okay.
Yeah.
Those are the quotes. Have you read Mike Causey today from the Washington Post?
No, I have not.
Well, you need to read his column.
What's he say?
Well, he's talking about this business about the federal workforce, and I'm going to come out for that because that's in my bailiwick.
You mean kind of like a WPA or a CCC?
No, I don't.
Oh, you're talking about the wage freeze, right?
Exactly. What 0.9% they were going to get, and they're not going to get that for number 2 years, and Obama is proposing that as some type of sweetheart deal with these people. Shit, they don't need to shoot Obama. Hell, they need to leave him alive because he's more of an asset to him alive than he ever would be dead. So he's nothing more than a goddamn quisling. Or a traitor.
Well, when you go around saying things like, I want to have a sleepover at Camp David with the people who hate my guts, kind of hard not to come to that conclusion, isn't it?
The man is a born-again fool, and he's too damn arrogant. And he, in my opinion, cares as much about the people you've been talking about as the Republicans do. He doesn't care. He's set for life at $400,000 a year, set up in 2001 as a presidential salary. Members of Congress make $174,000 a year. And where do they get the idea that people in TSA get $175,000?
Well, again, that came off of Fox. They don't have to get the idea. They just make it come out of their little lie holes.
That is just absolutely insane. I mean, you know, I've heard better stuff come out of the DNB from World War II histories as spoke by Dr. Goebbels, Hitler's propaganda minister. And they're going to save, over 2 years, $5 billion of the $14.8 trillion by cutting the federal workforce and not getting them any type of raise. And they're also very serious talks. If you read Mike Causey, and you do need to read him, because basically what happens in the federal workforce impacts on the rest of the economy and economic models followed in the private sector, okay? $5 billion. That's a real big savings now, isn't it?
That kind of talk reminds me of is all the right-wing idiots who say, we need to drill up in the Anwar because it'll give us energy freedom, when in fact every drop of oil in Anwar wouldn't amount to 6 weeks of American consumption. But again, Jim, and I'm not trying to overwork the idea, you and I are approaching this from a rational, fact-based, reality-driven world. And they're not. The only thing a Republican has on their plate is the insatiable drive to do the bidding of their corporate masters.
Well, their corporate masters are going to have a government that's not working, a government that's not going to be able to take care of their needs because they have needs too, and they're going to see exactly how they're going to function as sole entities without a federal government or a state government. I mean, you know, the corporate sector needs government in order to survive. Theirs is a symbiotic relationship. And these people obviously don't have sense enough to realize that.
The thing that I suspect is that, remember, Grover Norquist famously said, he didn't say he wanted to eliminate the government. He said he wanted to make it small enough to drown in a bathtub. And what he meant by that is the Republicans want to take away everything that does anything good for the working class. And they will leave just enough government to serve as a bootlick for corporate interests. At which point, and this rolls right back around to the conversation that you and I have been having, Jim, at that point, you have a perfect storm of a marriage between corporations and the powers of government, and you have de facto bingo fascism.
And we all know how long that lasted and how well it worked, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Not long.
You know, I don't take any pride in pointing out that that's the road that we're on, because I know how the movie ends.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, the strongest fascist state in Europe lasted, what, 12 years? And 5 years after it went to war?
Arguably, yeah, and then there's Spain.
Which, of course, transitioned into something else, and they're in a hell of a lot of trouble, too. And I'm not going to bother anybody with the prolixity and the numbers involving those situations abroad. But
let me point out one thing. Fascism didn't work in Italy. It didn't work in Germany. Ultimately, it didn't work in Spain, because all of those are countries that are interconnected on the European continent. It has never been tried on a grand scale such as would happen here.
We are just as connected as they were. We are just as connected economically, Bob, as they were geographically.
Well put.
Not more so. We are just as connected economically as they were geographically. So that doesn't flush. I'm sorry.
And you know what? I think you're probably right.
You're damn right I'm right. Now I know what I'm talking about too.
But the thing is, tell that to the people who want it, Jim.
Well, I don't know about Maybelline and Marbelline or whoever these people you're talking about, But they don't have sense enough to realize what the fuck's happening to them.
They don't have sense enough to come in out of the rain, but that's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the John Shadegs of the world. I'm talking about the people sitting there on that Fox panel who answer to people like Rupert Murdoch. And you cannot convince them that fascism is not their dream. They want it, Jim. They ache for it. They yearn for it.
Well, so did Adolf Hitler. So did Benito Mussolini. So did so many other people who have gone the way of the dodo. But the trouble is, they've taken so many innocent people with them. You know?
I do know. I do know. But the essential problem lies in the fact that all of those people control the means of information dissemination in this country.
And if President Obama is the only thing that's standing between us and them...
There ain't much standing between us and them.
Oh, I don't think so. And I'll tell you one thing. I would prefer it if the man would resign and leave the White House immediately. And if they were to impeach him and remove him, it would be his own fault, and he would deserve it.
Well, they're going to start... The House will start looking for a way to do that. And they will manage to make every bit of the business of the people of the United States stand on its head while they do it.
Because this man is, number one, he is insensitive, he is arrogant, he is stupid, and he is making overtures to the enemy, and he is no more less culpable than any of the appeasers were who gave Adolf Hitler his carte blanche to march into all of Europe, half of Russia, and kill 50 million people.
Well, you just got fan mail in from Sandra saying, go, Jim, a Quisling, fan-effing-tastic.
Because that's exactly what this man is. I called the White House today, and I left several messages to that effect. I called Manchin's office today, and my God, you think you called a kindergarten in there. I could not believe the people in there. And I finally said, either let me speak to the office manager or your chief of staff, or don't waste my time. And I enjoy classical music, but not what you're playing on your PA system today when you put me on hold.
Give them hell, Jim.
Because they're not talking to some stupid cracker here. I've worked in that city. I know what goes on in that city. And I understand a little bit, not all, but I know a lot more than some other people. And I'm not trying to exalt myself.
No. I'm sure that you have forgotten more than most people know.
You're goddamn right I have. You're goddamn right I have. And I see exactly what they're going to do to this country. And these unemployment benefits and the way these people are talking about them and the economics. I mean, these congressmen up there, half of them can't get a MasterCard in their own name. Are you aware of that?
Yep. I also remember the hot check scandal of a few years back.
The rating is so fucking bad. They can't even get a goddamn MasterCard or a Visa card unless it's something that government puts out through American Express. And then half of them abuse the shit out of it. And not to mention the fact that some of the stuff that these congressmen have pulled on the congressional bank that they use. Have you remember that?
Yep.
I mean, we are being led and driven by a bunch of idiots, and they don't give a shit. Now, normally, I don't talk this way. I leave that to other people to talk this way. But right now, I don't give a rat's ass whose feelings I hurt or offend. But I'm just telling it like it is. And this country is headed for an apocalypse. And as far as people being shot in the streets, you let that happen too many times. That happened in Russia back in 1917. It happened in Russia back in 1905 with the first revolution. Do you see what happened? We're talking about a total infrastructure collapse. Hell, the infrastructure of this country has already collapsed anyway. Probably.
You know what, Jim? That's the only place I take issue with you. Because I don't think the American people have that much gumption and get up and go in them to actually get out in the streets and be pissed off as long as the cable's on.
I think they do. Listen, hunger knows no nationality. Want and being cold knows no nationality. It would amaze you to know how many of these NRA people, when they begin to feel the pinch, will get out there and do strange things.
Oh, I'm scared to death of them, Jim.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, my friend.
But the thing is, when the NRA types and the teabagger types get out there and get mad, they're going to, A, bring their guns, and B, they're going to start shooting people who are not responsible for their problems.
Well, unfortunately, that is a collateral casualty of the situation, and I hate it just as much as you do, because it's basically the innocent people who have to die and who have to suffer. And, you know, these people in these urban sprawls, and how much of this country is urban and not rural?
Oh, we lose a little bit more farmland every day.
We're talking about what's going to happen in these large cities, and like New York, Los Angeles, Washington. You ever been in Washington when there's been a problem like this? Can you imagine what would happen in Anacostia over in the southeast? I've seen the fires burn over there. I know what I'm talking about, what happened in U Street, Cardozo, in that section of Washington, or in Watts in Los Angeles. You think about it. It's going to be another repeat of Dr. Zhivago.
Let me ask you this, Jim. Whether we agree or disagree on the willingness of people to do that, what is the end result when that happens? Because as far as I know from history, for the most part, it is always the working people and the poor people who take it on the chin.
Not necessarily. You're going to have a revolution in this country, and they're going to take back from these people, as happened in the Soviet Union when Tsarism collapsed. And you're going to happen. Look at what happened in Europe in the revolutions of 1832, 1848. I mean, for a while there was repression when reactionary governments like Nicholas I were able to suppress it, but you can't suppress it long, my friend. And there are more people who are poor and hungry than there are of them, and when they rise up, they're not going to have any mercy on these corporate masters or these people who have put them in this place in the first place. I have no good things to say tonight.
Well, you know, I don't necessarily. That's not necessarily a requirement of the program. This is, you know, the reality spoken here. You know what I mean?
I'm just talking about history and how it repeats itself. And, you know, when you have situations in which there are revolutions, you have people who are put against the wall, innocent, not guilty, not innocent, yes, guilty, yes, who suffer the same fate. And they're all considered mistakes, corrected only by the graveyard.
That is a picture of a brutal future that you outlined, Jim.
Well, what do you think we're on this program for? What have you been talking about?
I know, but what I'm saying is that I do differ with you in that I think,
do you think there's some kind of safety mechanism that's going to kick in and stop this? There isn't.
So are you the two women who appeared on the Fox clip?
Hell, one of them was probably a plant.
Well, I don't know why they were on there, but they were both very clear in that they were nonviolent.
Oh, yeah. They probably have a husband who's working with somebody to pay the bills at home, and theirs is a secondary income. That's probably why they were selected. But I'm talking about the primary breadwinner. You want to see a good example of what could happen in this country? Watch that movie, Nicholas and Alexandra. Watch it.
So you don't think the pacification of the people via the great electronic morphine drip will suffice?
The drip will be cut off because they don't have any power. They don't have any TV. You yourself said that.
I did indeed.
We're talking about the basic necessities of life. We're talking about food, power, shelter, warmth.
Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
The whole thing, when it comes down, it comes down. And at the very top, it falls just as hard. If not, it'll fall a lot further and a lot farther than the base will. Let me tell you that.
True, true. Jim, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Well, I don't know if you really do or not.
Well, I do. No, I really do. I really do. This is, you know, this is not kindergarten, and this is not the sewing circle.
And I'm not trying to scare people. I'm not trying to say things I should not. But I know whereof I speak. I am no great seer, but I have enough common sense, and I read, and I understand the ramifications of what is happening now, and the attitudes of these people who think for a temporary period of time in their lives that they will be in the ascendancy, they will be brought down. And I hate to see it come because I'm part of them. I'm probably one of the first ones they'll line up against the wall and shoot. Are you aware of that?
No.
Well, here's a federal bureaucrat. He helped it happen. Let's line him up. No, unlike they said in Nicholas and Alexandra, there are no more rooms for these form of bureaucrats. As well as princes and dukes and earls and grand dukes and members of the Romanov family. That's what could happen in this country. My father taught me this because he lived through a depression. And he realized how close we came to total anarchy. And when people were talking about going to the streets,
you know, I found it interesting, and I'm not trying to go away from what you're talking about. I'm trying to work within it. One of the things I found interesting out of the Fox clip was when the unemployed woman said, "There are no jobs anymore. Our jobs have been outsourced. Our jobs are gone."
Exactly. And where are the jobs? They've all been outsourced and put overseas.
They're in India. They're in China. They're in Kuala Lumpur.
So, I mean, what kind of jobs are they going to have? I mean, you know, there are no jobs. If there are no jobs, there's no money. If there is
well,
no
Jim,
money.
Jim, how is it that you can understand this, I can understand this, the Horn family can understand this, and yet it seems to be such a daggum mystery to the satraps in Washington?
Because they live inside the Beltway, and they are totally insulated, and as you said, they are collected every morning by a driver, and they are in such a position that they can have their homes cleaned and taken care of by illegal immigrants and people like that. They are just like the Russian upper class before World War I. That's exactly where they are. That's exactly where it was in St. Petersburg under Nicholas II. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. You're painting a picture of...
The only thing these people are interested in St. Petersburg, the capital, were in their next advancement or their next appointment to the royal court and stuff of this, while the rest of the people out there in the country were starving and living on the subsistence of animals. And it took one war to bring that whole crashing structure down. This infrastructure of this country, both social and material, is tottering on the brink. Now, I don't mean to monopolize any more time, and I'm going to get off here, but I would be interested to hear what some of your other people had to say about what I've said.
Well, we will see if we can't garner some of that, Jim. Thank you very much.
And all right, Bob, I'm sorry, but...
Don't apologize. You have nothing to apologize for, my friend.
I mean, you know, I'm trying to speak the truth as I see it, and if I'm wrong, I would like for somebody to point out that I'm wrong and say, Jim, you made a mistake. Jim, you're full of shit. I don't care how they say it. I've got thick ears, and I don't mind, because I come from a very thick-head background.
I understand. Jim, you take care.
Good night, buddy.
Bye now. I don't think I'm going to get a whole lot of Jim, you're wrong emails. This rolled in during the conversation, coming from our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, at Cavalcade of Crazy, headonradionetwork.com. He says, this is so disgusting. The administration should have been way out in front of this long ago. What amazes me is how everyone ignores the easiest path to debunking the main conservative lie. Someone needs to ask and keep asking until the other side screams. Since we've had the Bush tax cuts for almost 10 years now, where are all the jobs? Obama and everyone on the team needs to pound the Republicans with this every day. And let the citizens know what a scam they want to run on us again. Every time there's a camera on this administration, they have to go after it. The president is the only one with the power to fight back against the blowtorch of the right wing. And then Reverbo says, what am I thinking? It's clear that the president, and by extension the Democrats, have capitulated. And he adds, I'm as ticked off as Jim. But he's wrong about the result. If Americans of any persuasion decide to rise up with violence, they will be gunned down like dogs. The fascist military-industrial financial order is already in place, and they will not give up their privilege. There would be Wacos everywhere. And I guess that's kind of the side that I fall on, because I have lost, not in you, and not in myself, and we're nonviolent in the first place. The only way we would ever use a firearm, those of us who have them, is if somebody was coming through our door. But Jim mentioned the loonies from the NRA. And those crazy bastards will get in the streets. And they'll bring their guns with them. And they're going to start shooting at you. Because for years, Glenn Beck has been sitting there to, oh, it's the progressives, it's the liberals. If we just get rid of, you know, what was the end of that Tom Tomorrow the panel that I read at the beginning of the program, where the right-wing idiot, the right-wing freak... What's the last thing he says after the tepid Democrat says, well, maybe we can work together, and the right-wing nut job says, die, liberal scum, die. That ain't a joke. That's not clever comic whimsy. That's how they talk when they're amongst each other and they think none of us are listening. And some of them even talk it out in public now. Witness Representative Joe Barton, who wants to put his crosshairs on Barack Obama. I ain't scared of no 6'7" Arab in a cave in Pakistan with a portable dialysis machine, but these right-wing teabagging horses' asses scare me water-boweled. Cindy writing in from the Great Northwest, Jim has a pretty clear view. He's right. And I think it's going to take that very revolution to turn this thing around. Americans have already proven how lazy and stupid they are. I'm feeling disheartened today. I had two repairmen come to repair my refrigerator shelf and my washing machine. Two separate service calls, one service call agency. It seems the serviceman can only fix a single type of appliance. One does refrigerators, one does washing machines, one dishwashers, and so forth. The sad thing? Both these young guys in their 20s had the IQ of a fourth grader. The coming revolution? I'm not happy about it, but I'm prepared. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
I was just enjoying the show this evening. And a
little heavy tonight.
That's all right. I heard you say something about going to Nashville. Is that right?
Yes.
And that's for?
It's related to mountaintop removal. The coal mob apparently is going to have a table disseminating its usual raft of tissue paper lies. So we're going to try to be there with some facts at our own table.
Excellent. Excellent. That outreach and advocacy is so important. And I mentioned to you, I stumbled upon a documentary called A Climate for Change or A Climate of Change.
Yes.
And It featured Judy Bonds and other activists around the world, and just really beautifully put together and making a lot more people aware of what's going on in the mountaintops of West Virginia and, you know, here in Colorado. We're hugely affected by the natural gas mining, drilling going on.
And you know what? There have been a couple of significant bits of progress, Preston, relating to the Marcellus Shale in the last couple of days. I don't know if you saw it, but the city of Pittsburgh, its city council passed a binding resolution that absolutely prevents any Marcellus Shale hydrofracking inside the corporate limits of Pittsburgh.
Excellent.
And now the legislature in the state of New York, at least one house, has passed a Marcellus Shale hydrofracking moratorium at least through May of next year.
Excellent. You know, I think I did see something about that in Yes Magazine. And I do love that journal. I mean, and I don't disagree with Jim's, you know, all that negative stuff he was talking about. There's certainly...
Yeah, I don't think he's being negative for negative's sake. I think he's being a realistic viewer of the situation.
I agree. And similarly, I think Yes Magazine has another sort of view of the situation equally as real. And maybe it can become more real. I don't know if we think about it hard enough. I don't know. Who knows if we click our heels together, maybe. But anyway, I'll try anything these days.
Yeah, I understand. And you kind of got to. It's that or scream at the furniture.
There you go.
Which I do a good bit of. I'm lucky that I've got a piece of furniture called a microphone that I get to scream at.
Definitely. And I loved your description of that other piece of furniture, the television, the great electronic morphine drip.
Ain't it?
And there again, I don't disagree with that negative perception at all, and there's certainly a reality to it. And then there's this other reality. But speaking of the morphine trip, and in fact, I've been coming across these documentaries from the Media Education Foundation, and it's a shame they're not available on Amazon or Netflix. They kind of cater to colleges and libraries. You can access them through public libraries. But anyway, they do a lot of really penetrating media analysis, a lot pretty depressing too, how our children are being manipulated, young girls being kind of hyper sexualized by Hannah Montana. Her younger sister Noah, in real life, Miley Cyrus's younger sister Noah Cyrus, she's nine, she's starting a line of lingerie for kids.
Oh, stop.
And in the past she's been dressed like a dominatrix, and it's weird.
Well, you know, Billy Ray Cyrus rose to fame on a mullet. So, you know, far be it from him to be fashion conscious. He will do anything with those daughters of his to make a buck. You know, achy breaky heart will only take you so far.
Right. And the whole that whole Hannah Montana, the framing of it, the piped in laughter, the sets where everyone's just kind of shopping and vacationing all the time. There's a lot of class stuff going on there on top of the sexism and everything else. And celebrity worship it encourages. And kids mock other kids if they're not wearing the cool clothes. Then you go to Target and you find the line of Hannah Montana clothes to be cool because you don't want to be mocked. You know, like the show just taught her, you know.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, I've got teenagers, so I really do kind of grok that more than most folks might know.
Okay. One title of theirs I did want to mention is a documentary called The Mean World Syndrome. And it talks about some of the effect of violence, seeing so much violence on this hugely influential platform. But there's that other side of the media where just really interesting work going on. As I mentioned, that documentary, A Climate of Change, I think I saw that on Link Television. And that's been mostly a viewer-supported channel. I think they've gotten a few grants here and there. But, you know, they get a lot of small donations from people. And so this kind of grassroots, progressive Network, Free Speech TV is another one.
I am not in any wise diminishing the value of that, Preston, but those are channels that you only get if you pay for the upper tiers.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you get cable, you get Fox.
Definitely. You know, if you go out in public, you so often get Fox. I mean, how many restaurants?
And I wonder how much money
has been tossed around to make that happen. You know, I wonder.
I wonder about that kind of thing too. But you know, it was, I guess, week before last, perhaps, when Elaine was telling us about a situation that I just found hair-raising. Bless her heart, she has to go to dialysis 3 or 4 times a week. I don't know if you heard this, but she was talking about the fact that she's gotten in trouble with her dialysis people because she does. You know, she tried to say something about Fox. You know, can you imagine having to have kidney dialysis while watching Fox? You know, I'd be giving birth to aneurysms every 15 seconds. You know, oh, wait a minute, we've got to clear it out. Bob blew another one. Yeah, and I'm not making light, but my God. But the cool thing was, out of that conversation, I got an email from, and I just read an email from Cindy up in the Great Northwest, and she bought a little gadget. And, Preston, you might like to have one of these, too. And Cindy says they work, by Jove. It's called a TV Be Gone. It is a universal remote that only does one thing. It turns the damn thing off. And it's a little, it sits on your key ring. It's not emblazoned with TV Be Gone.
Uh-huh.
You just quietly take it out of your purse or your pocket and you click and the damn thing goes away and nobody's ever the wiser.
Yeah, yeah. Although I don't know, I wonder if I got rid of it entirely, if I wouldn't kind of miss it. I don't know.
Not
maybe
Fox.
That's some weakness of mine.
Well, yeah, okay. It's got well, right. It's the for people like us, it's the same emotional equivalent of that sense you get in the horror movie when the beautiful blonde girl is going down the stairs into the basement, and the entire audience is going, "Jesus, don't go down there."
You know, I think there's something about the visual of it, the colors, the lights. It's kind of like a stained glass almost, like a rapid-moving stained glass in a sense, or maybe the kind of light energy of watching a fire. In fact, they've studied brain waves and people are watching TV, and oftentimes it creates, I think they're called alpha waves, which is what you have when you're meditating. And if you ever look at someone when they're watching TV, not always, but in some moments, they kind of look.
Yeah, if you could tap into their brains, you'd hear the om.
So I guess just being more mindful of what we're meditating on, I think, is the key. And, you know, back to that, what you had called the television, the great electronic morphine drip, that reminded me of something I recently posted, or a Facebook friend posted on my wall, this older Michael Franti song called TV Drug of a Nation.
Oh, John Fox used to play that all the time.
okay, great. And so there again, a very important song. I remember that, hearing that a couple decades ago. And anyway, come 20 years later, he, you know, the irony of it, or the paradox, is that he's on some TV that now and again, Link TV did. They have this multicultural music program, and I saw one of his videos there. And I think he even gets some play on some of the more, you know, some of the broader channels here in the U.S. Now and again. Anyway, I know his songs do. I hear them on the big commercial stations, and that's what a breath of fresh air. We were talking about how sometimes people get nostalgic for the old protest music, but. You know, like there, here again, Michael Franti, what we have now in the present is really something I think to be thankful for. And real recently he came through town, and I didn't get to see him, but he's just doing a lot of good stuff.
Oh, I'd love to catch one of his shows. He's amazing.
Definitely.
I just don't think he's going to be playing Gully Bridge anytime soon.
Yeah. Gully Bridge?
Yeah, that's one of the little hamlets nearby.
You never know. He was in Iraq, actually, and he's been to Palestine, and he's played in a lot of...
God, wouldn't I love to see him playing up on Larry Gibson's mountain, right there next to the Caford, next to the mountaintop removal site.
You may someone may want to drop him a line. You never know. And real quickly, I know you probably have other callers that want to wish you a happy travels. And so I'll let you move along. But a couple resources really quickly. You know Climate Progress?
Oh, yes.
Okay. A great blog to kind of respond to the endless deception from the fossil fuel industry, all their PR agents. You did a great job dismantling the right-wing kind of elitist rhetoric about jobs.
Oh, and I've got another one here that I didn't get to tonight, and I'm actually going to bookmark this because it'll hold. I'm going to save this thing and hang on to it until I get back to the microphone next week. There is a 12-part DVD series coming out. No, really, from the of course the fraud merchants of the religion industry, and it is a series called Beware the Green Dragon. Before you go, I just want. Just check out a little bit, just a tiny little bit of this audio, okay? And this is going to go out all over creation, Preston.
Beware the Green Dragon.
Beware the Green Dragon.
So what is a heads up about the green... The
well, this is dog whistling to the religion industry fundamentalists about the threat of having a green economy because the green economy is, by definition, not Jesus-centered. Apparently, Jesus was dipped in oil. So just check this out real quick. Hold on.
In what has become one of the greatest deceptions of our day, radical environmentalism is striving to put America and the world under its destructive control. This so-called green dragon is seducing your children in our classrooms and popular culture. Its lust for political power now extends to the highest global levels. And its twisted view of the world elevates nature above the needs of people, of even the poorest and the most helpless. With millions falling prey to its spiritual deception, the time is now to stand and resist. Around the world, environmentalism has become a radical movement, something we call the Green Dragon. And it is deadly. Deadly to human prosperity, deadly to human life, deadly to human freedom, and deadly to the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Can you believe it?
That's creepy. Yeah. Oh, boy.
This will be playing in the basements of Baptist churches all over the country. Listen to who all's involved with this. Many well-known Christian leaders, I really object to that use of the word Christian with these people, because they ain't.
Yeah.
Many well-known Christian leaders agree. Focus on the Family's Tom Minnery joined Family Research Council's Tony Perkins, the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission's Richard Land, we call him Dick Land here on the show, Concerned Women for America's Wendy Wright, Homeschool Legal Defense Association's Michael Ferris, National Religious Broadcasters Frank Wright, Wall Builders David Barton, and radio talk show host Janet Parshall in filming introductions and commentary for the 12-part DVD series, which you can have with your simple love offering of $152.
Mm, wow. I wonder how large its kind of opposite is. I mean,
but did you notice Preston how they said that green sustainability efforts will cost human lives? What do they think is going to happen when the islands sink?
Right.
I mean, is it all just, right. Do they have, no, they don't believe in evolution, so the people can't just evolve into dolphins or something.
The islands sink, the droughts spread, the fires get more intense and more regular.
But, you can tell the effect that some of this stuff is having because, I do. I go wandering around a bunch of liberal message boards and stuff, and without fail, I'm beginning to see here and there and other places people opining who are not right-wingers, who aren't right-wing trolls on these things, Preston. I'm beginning to see people who consider themselves to be liberal saying that there is no apparent threat to human life from global climate catastrophe.
That's surprising. I see it,
scary.
Constantly in, Yeah, I see. Consistently, and, you know, the right-wing attacks are so, again, there's just such a monoculture of thought. I mean, a regimentation that's taken place. You know, they all have the same approach about attack Al Gore. You know, something about his personality, maybe, or maybe his clothing or something. And, you know, very rarely, you know, they keep the focus on him. You know, they label him, they jacket him, and then the other arguments are there's a lot of money to be made in environmental movement, kind of overlooking the fossil fuel industry being the most, you know, I think Exxon set some record last quarter or a couple quarters ago for the biggest profits ever in the history of any corporation.
Oh, and in the right, and the news in the midst of this so-called economic meltdown, that lo and behold, Wall Street corporations are they're raking it in hand over fist. You know what? It's all right. You know, the Wall Street could just as well be the cover of that old Supertramp album. You know, crisis? What crisis?
Yeah, and climate catastrophe is just more a disaster capitalism. But again, there's the flip side of a capitalism that's also seems to be growing, both in its, you know, on the farm and in our minds, is, you know, the sustainable farming movement, the mass transit here and there, lots of setbacks, but more of that's being pushed. And again, you know, who's going to create jobs? Who are the job creators? Well, we can be job creators. You know, via our government, you know, one of the arguments is often this catchphrase they've been using for years. It's, well, a poor person never gave me a job. You know, so it's got
well, and you heard that very thing in the Shadegg quote there a little bit ago.
That's right.
What? Unemployed people are creating jobs? Huh?
Yeah. And your rebuttal to that was great. And, but just to kind of underline a couple other things, it's like, you know, as taxpayers, yes, collectively we create these jobs, and also poor people start businesses. You know, and they've been entrepreneurs, and yeah, they do create jobs.
Well, yeah, whatever happened to that? Because until recently, the right wing was all just all over themselves over the idea of the entrepreneurial individualist spirit of American exceptionalism, where we pull ourselves up out of poverty by our own bootstraps. What happened to that?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and also, you know, poor people, middle-class people as, you know, contributors to the government and the jobs that it's created, I think, you know, for better and worse, you know, in some ways. You know, again, it's not just an issue of jobs. It's what are we doing? Not do you have a job and how much do you get? It's what is your work? And is it going to be building more prisons, which there's always seems to be enough money for? Or is it going to be social spending on schools and hospitals and hospices and libraries and aid to disabled people to get, I mean, the unnecessary suffering and struggling that people are going through is just so shameful to see. That reminds me when Michael Franti, when he did come through Denver, the place he did a fundraiser for was the Gathering Place. And it was actually, he did a little concert, and he also taught and did music for a yoga class. And apparently that's something he's been getting into.
Awesome.
And, again, there's, aside from the Christian right, the corporate co-optation of the term Christian, you know, there is this other sort of spirituality going on in this country. And I'm kind of, as with the growth of Buddhism, I think, kind of some of the yoga and Hindu stuff is another rich contribution in many ways.
Oh, without a doubt.
Are you familiar with Ram Dass's work at all?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Be Here Now and stuff like that.
Oh, and I got exposed to Be Here Now when I was about in 10th grade.
Oh wow, great. a hippie friend of mine passed along a copy of that book to me a while back, and hippie is a term of endearment for
right.
me, totally. And more recently, I came across this book called American Veda, and about how Hindu philosophy has influenced people like Emerson and Thoreau and Allen Ginsberg and some of our musicians and stuff like that. So anyway, interesting stuff, fascinating, enriching stuff going on in the midst of the fascist movement. And on that, I want to cite real quickly a Tom Hartman article from about 4 years ago, actually, on Common Dreams. It's called The Ghost of Vice President Wallace Warns It Can Happen Here. I don't know if
yes.
you remember this.
Yes.
But one of FDR's vice presidents really put it well.
Yeah, Henry Wallace, exactly.
And let me see if I can find it really quickly. His description of what sort of... Oh, well, I'll just let you read that at some point.
Yeah, if you don't mind, shoot me a link along. Preston, it's awfully good to hear from you.
I'll put a link on Facebook for you.
Okay, cool. I appreciate it. All right.
Have a great time in Nashville, and we'll talk later.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Bye now. And that's the Horns resident optimist. That is Preston. And you know, I'm always grateful for his thoughts because there's always some kind of uplift in what Preston brings to the party. Let's see if we can work, if you're still there, if you were patient. Nope, you weren't. So, okay. It's about 12 minutes before the hour, about time to wrap up. Here it is. Just so you can hear what it was that Preston was talking about. Like I said, John Fox has played this a million times, and it's a great song. Michael Franti and Television, The Drug of the Nation. This is a real keeper.
Well, on a brighter note, commercial breaks.
The government has now banned the carrying of spears.
Stop about every 1,000 miles, ain't asking too much, is it?
You might wish to stay on and listen.
It was a place where everything was legal.
I met this woman.
So if you're looking for emotional satisfaction, my advice to you is seek professional help.
Thank you for joining us live on the air.
My pleasure.
One Nation, under God, has turned into one nation under the influence of one drug. Television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV, its satellite links, a United States of unconsciousness. Apathetic, therapeutic, and extremely addictive. The methadone metronome, pumping out 150 channels 24 hours a day. You can flip through all of them, and still there's nothing worth watching. TV is the reason why less than 10% of our nation reads books daily. Why most people think Central America means Kansas. Socialism means un-American, and apartheid is the new headache remedy. Absorbed in this world, it's so hard to find us. It shapes our minds the most. Maybe the mother of our nation should remind us that we're sitting too close to the television. The drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. TV is a stomping ground for political candidates, where bears in the woods are chased by Grecian fauna and bald eagles. TV is mechanized politics, remote control over the masses, co-sponsored by environmentally safe gases. Watch for the PBS special. It's a perpetuation of the two-party system, where image takes precedence over wisdom, where soundbite politics are served to the fast food culture, where straight teeth in your mouth are more important than the words that come out of it. Race baiting is the way to get selected. Will he Horton or will he not get elected? On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation.
On the screen is an address where you can mail your tithe offering or give the blood.
Okay, got the idea? All right, now let's practice it.
Is it the reflector or the director? Does it imitate us or do we imitate it? Because a child watches 1,500 murders before he's 12 years old And then we wonder why we created a Jason generation that learns to laugh rather than abhor the whore. TV is a place where armchair generals and quarterbacks can experience firsthand the excitement of video warfare as a theme song is sung in the background. Sugar sweet sitcoms that leave us with a bad actor taste, while pop stars metamorphosize into soda pop stars. You saw the video, you heard the soundtrack. Well, now go buy the soft drink. Well, the only cola that I support would be a union COLA cost of living allowance on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation on television. The drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. Return to our irregularly programmed schedule, hidden cleverly between heavy-breasted beer and car commercials. CNN, ESPN, ABC, BCB, TNT, but mostly BS, where oxymoronic language, like virtually spotless, fresh, frozen, light, yet filling, and military intelligence have become standard. TV is a place where phrases are redefined, like recessions and necessary downturns, crude oil on a beach to moose, civilian death to collateral damages, and being killed by your own army is now called friendly fire. TV is a place where the pursuit of happiness has become the pursuit of trivia, where toothpaste and cars have become sex objects, where imagination is sucked out of children by a cathode ray nipple. TV is the only wet nurse that would create a cripple. Television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance, feeding radiation. On television, the drug of a nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation. On television, the drug of the nation, breeding ignorance and feeding radiation.
So glad John sent that along, because that's when Preston referenced it, I started looking furiously around trying to find it. Michael Franti is a genius. This is from that particular song is from one of his earlier efforts, The Disposable Heroes of Hip-Hopracy. The Disposable Heroes of Hip-Hopracy. Our buddy Reverbo went wandering. He said, I immediately wondered what Bagent might have written, our buddy Joe Bagent, might have written on the recent madness, and came across this essay he wrote while in Italy on October 25th, 2010, titled Algorithms and Red Wine. I think we actually referenced that on the program one night. This paragraph says a lot about what we've been talking about tonight. If there can be a solution at this late stage, and most thinking people seriously doubt there can be a solution in the way we have always thought of solutions, it begins with powering down everything we consider to be the economy and our survival. That and population reduction, which nobody wants to discuss in actionable terms. Worse yet, there is no state-sanctioned, organized entry level for people who want to power down from the horrific machinery of money. There are too many financial, military, and corporate governmental forces that don't want to see us power down because it would spell their death, but rather power up even more. That's called a recovery. You know, that's amazing, because there are a lot of people working the same wavelength in wildly disparate fashions David in Tennessee also noting in regard to that line, I ain't never seen no poor person create no job. David notes, an unemployed person never created a job. How about 2,500 unemployed people with a benefits check? Their immediate spending will set a bunch of people in motion. And that's precisely the point. Precisely the point. It is a known fact, for instance, that the best stimulus inside the economy is food stamps. If we got serious about food stamps and increased the food stamp daily allotment from less than $3 a day per person to $10 a day, you can't do anything but spend that. You can't save your food stamp money. But somehow, it's obnoxious because it's welfare. People, American citizens, eating is welfare. Gosh, I wish there was another hour or so to go at this, but there isn't. So it's time to knock off. I will be back Monday night, unless for some reason I don't leave for Nashville in the morning. But there's no reason to think that I won't. I will be back Monday night. In the meantime, your continued contributions at headonradionetwork.com, the PayPal button there, or the snail mail address are wildly important, and I thank you for the ones that have come in the last few days. Thank you very, very much. We close out November in a hole that is about $750 deep. But God knows you try. And all of us here at the Horn are grateful beyond expression for what you do. Thank you so very much. And thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com, our Southeast correspondent, as noted, our Cavalcade of Crazy correspondent at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, Reverbo, John Fox, who shows just his incredible Johnny on the Spot, talents, cranking up that song real quick, plus the fact that he's our webmaster, web designer, chief engineer. John's a busy man. And then there's Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, who has literally saved liberal conversation on the Internet, beginning his efforts all the way back in 2002. Thanks also to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. It is on their behalf that I will be heading to Nashville tomorrow. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Time for Rick Smith, live from Pennsylvania.